Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and this is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. And today we continue our series of programs on Governor Walker's proposed budget for the next biennium by looking at likely specific impacts of that budget on local county government in north central Wisconsin, on the revenue available to it, and the effect of budget cuts to the services that it provides. Our guest for the next hour is Marathon County Administrator Brad Carter, who has put together a study of the key issues and opportunities emerging from both the budget repair bill and the proposed biennium budget, looking at a proposed cut to shared revenue of 24%, changes in the administration of Medicaid, food share, and other programs for the poor, which will be transferred from the county to the state and contracted out to a private vendor, resulting in the layoffs of local social service workers. There will also be a freeze in the enrollment in family care, cuts to highway maintenance money, a two-tiered collective bargaining structure for the county's workers, a freeze in the county tax levy, and additional complexity in the requirements for the elderly to enroll in senior care. If you've got questions about any of these cutbacks or administrative changes and how they may affect you or your family, or if you want to weigh in on the state budget, our lines are open right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And Brad Carter, I take it you've been pretty busy over the past few weeks.
Very busy. It's an interesting, very unsettled time.
It's got to be a challenging time for you as the Marathon County Administrator, and I think one of the challenges is just trying to communicate all of these potential changes to the people in the county.
It is. I've put a big effort into talking to our employees about the future of our organization, how the budget impacts us. I've also talked to many of the service organizations so the people in the community understand what it is that they're faced with, too.
And I saw you at a Wausau Rotary meeting a couple of weeks ago, and we just ran out of time before you even scratched the surface, so I figured, mm-hmm. Well, we should probably do an hour-long program. I want to set things up with some comments by one of the critics of this budget proposal, who spoke at one of the public hearings on it, the first hearing in Stevens Point a couple of weeks ago. He's Bruce Chopped, who's a member of NAOMI, which is an interfaith Wausau area justice group, also a former D.C. Everest teacher, and here are his concerns.
As people of faith, we are speaking up because we feel a budget is a moral document that needs to represent our values. The budget is punitive toward lower-income families. There are cuts in income support for the poor and unemployed. Food and nutrition assistance are reduced. Medical services, child care, and in-home care for seniors and persons with disabilities are more expensive and less accessible. Taxes for low-income households will be substantially higher. These cuts do very little to balance the budget, yet they create a hardship for families. We take particular offense at the attempt to demonize state and local employees who maintain hundreds of vital community functions. Unions have helped to build and maintain a strong middle class. As Milwaukee's Catholic Archbishop Listecki has said, hard times do not nullify the moral obligation each of us has to respect the legitimate rights of workers. The budget process must not undermine the operation of schools, cities, and counties, vital for middle-class families, individuals, and businesses to prosper.
That's Bruce Chopped, who's a member of a Wausau area interfaith justice group, NAOMI, testifying at one of the hearings before the Joint Finance Committee on Governor Walker's proposed biennium budget. And Brad Carter, that pretty much sums up what the critics are saying and what people who have traditionally supported the poor, the elderly, the disadvantaged in our society. What, if any, assurances can you give those people as the county administrator that you might be able to take some steps to ameliorate some of these cuts?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that our county is going to do, as we did last year, is that the county board is going to have a retreat in August. It's going to determine which of its programs are the highest priority. And rather than having across-the-board cuts, which are more the norm than they should be, And we're going to target those lower priority programs and make the target the cuts there. But that's not it. I mean, it's not just a matter of we lose a dollar, we cut a dollar. We have to take those high priority programs and constantly be looking for ways to do them more efficiently. We've got to cut, you know, I've got so many people saying to me, we've been doing that for 10 years. Well, we're going to do it for at least 10 more. Because it's a constant search for if we could do it for less, why wouldn't we? And because if we don't, what the things that typically show up at the bottom of the priority scale are our parks and our libraries and the things that make a real high quality of life and preserve our economic viability of this community. So we can't just have we lose a dollar, we cut a dollar be our philosophy.
Well, if you cut parks and libraries, conceivably that could affect the overall economic climate in the county. It could affect, if you cut enough of those things, it could affect whether or not people want to move into Marathon County or whether businesses want to move here.
Right, especially businesses that pay more than median wage. They have to have locations that professional employees enjoy living in, or they cannot have the workforce to sustain their productivity.
We're talking about a shared revenue cut to counties by of 24%. How much is that going to impact you?
Well, it's a lot. But to be honest with you, it's less than what I anticipated. So, you know, in some ways, the news was so bad that 24% sounded good. You know, the one thing you have to watch out for with that is that we also will be saving about $1.5 million in employee compensation. You know, what I'm projecting is that no one gets an increase, that all employees will now be paying the 12.5% of their pay towards a retirement, which was previously county paid, and that all employees will be paying more towards their health care. So we end up with $1.54 million. Well, you take the $1.1 million out of it, now you don't have very much left, but you still have some room to work with. One of the things that we did as a county board leadership is we had a conversation, and we said we weren't going to fight the reduction of shared revenue. Here's a simple fact. The state doesn't have the money to give to us, and we're going to have to find ways to accommodate that in really using our creativity and our prioritization process.
Those cuts to the salaries, those are pretty much in line with what the governor recommended for public workers across the board?
They are, and what we're going to do is the retirement is required. The health care is not because we don't have the state, but we are going to do that.
What are some of the areas that you're most concerned about with this budget?
Okay, I'll tell you, the conversation, the public conversation is all about collective bargaining, but this budget's all about Medicaid. Half the state deficit, $1.8 billion, is a deficit in Medicaid. And most people don't think there's very much Medicaid here in Marathon County, but I wanted to demonstrate to you that there is. There used to be a program called Medicaid. And actually, not that many people 20 years ago participated. It was really people in poverty. But now our other programs called Badger Care Plus, which is really a Medicaid waiver project, Family Care, those are Medicaid programs and senior care. And they, you know, this deficit did not get created by Scott Walker. It got created by multiple administrations over multiple years, really starting with Tommy Thompson.
Well, it also got created by the fact that we had an incredible economic downturn 2 years ago. The economy was devastated, and when that happens, you lose all of your tax revenue.
Well, that's exactly right. But here's another thing that happened, especially with Badger Care Plus, was when there was created a public option, some of the businesses that we had in Marathon County contacted us and said we can no longer afford to pay for health care, and they used our methods to make sure that their employees had health care. So they backed out of the health care business knowing that their employees, because of the wages they pay, would qualify for Badger Care Plus. Now, and we have 18,000 people in Marathon County in just one Medicaid program called Badger Care Plus. Now, let's assume that they raise the income and asset requirements, raise them. Let's say only 9,000 people. I don't think any of those could qualify. I don't think any of those companies are going to go back and now reoffer health care. So my question is, what happens? They're still going to have health care needs. Our local community, Aspirus, Ministry, Marshall Clinic, are still going to meet them, and they're not going to be paid by Medicaid. because they're not eligible for that. So I think what we're about to see is more cost shifting to whoever the medical providers can cost shift to. So it'll go back to employers. So if it goes back to employers, let's say it increases everybody else's premiums by 8 or 9%, what will happen again is the marginal profitable companies will drop providing health care to their employees. So there is no easy solution to this whole health care business.
I mean, you've got a continuing downward spiral then, right?
We do.
Explain how Badger Care and senior care and so on, how are these Medicaid programs? Medicaid is funded by the federal government, but what we're talking about here are Wisconsin programs. I'm sure that doesn't compute for a lot of our listeners.
No, it's a 60-40 split. I believe the federal government's the 60 part of that, and the 40% is state. Both programs have deficits. You know, when the program goes down, it's an entitlement. And when the economy goes down, more people qualify. And a lot of times you get people who have pent-up demand. You know, by the time they get authorized, something that could have been dealt with for the benefit, they could have been dealt with relatively simply, and now is advanced to something that's much more expensive and much more health damaging. So the funding of health care is not just about public financing. It's a much greater public issue as to how people get health care. And financing Medicaid is a huge part of this budget.
How many people are going to lose their health care in Marathon County or lose significant portions of it?
Here's the interesting part about this. We don't know that because the budget doesn't make any changes to income or asset eligibility. It does something that I have a hard time believing is constitutional. It delegates the authority to make administrative rules that would be in conflict with current law to the Secretary of Health Services, basically an employee of the governor.
This is somebody that the governor appoints.
Appoints. This is basically a state employee, not a policymaker. It's a secretary, you know, the Secretary of Health Services. And then it needs to go back to both the Assembly and the Senate to an oversight committee. If no one objects, it's in. So what's happening is, and to be honest with you, I understand this, having worked with elected bodies. Nobody wants to vote to reduce the benefits or increase a premium contribution or have the result be people who were eligible at one point for a benefit, they're not eligible. So mm-hmm. What they're trying to do is kind of palm it off on the secretary, who doesn't have to get elected.
So the secretary gets to be the bad guy.
Right, but how can, you know, I'm also a student of process, not just outcome. This is really bad process. And I think it would be subject to a constitutional challenge.
Do you think there will be a constitutional challenge, a lawsuit filed?
I think so. And I
so that's what we need in this state is more litigation.
Right.
As if we don't have enough right now.
And what happens in the interim? That's an interesting question. You know, while it's being processed, are people eligible for the benefit or not? And if not, if they're excluded, what happens to the claims if they found out later it's reinstated? Do they have to go back and prove up their claims, or how would all that work?
1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. We're talking to Marathon County Administrator Brad Karger about the very real effects on Medicaid, senior care, family care, highway maintenance, a whole litany of things that are going to be affected at the county level and the services that it provides. If the proposed biennium budget goes through as it has been drawn up, we'd like your input. If you've got questions about how this might affect you or your family members, Brad is probably the best person around to answer those questions. 1-800-780-9742. Now, just today, Brad Karger, the legislature's Joint Finance Committee announced that they would remove 21 non-fiscal items from the proposed biennium budget and take them up as separate pieces of legislation. You probably haven't had a lot of an opportunity to look at that. Does anything really significant in that list stand out to you in terms of county government? And
No, not that I'm aware of. There wasn't. I don't think those were the significant items.
And generally speaking, it's probably a good idea from your point of view to remove non-fiscal items from a fiscal budget?
Oh, my gosh, of course. But I tell you, everyone agrees with that, but every year it continues to happen.
1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with your phone calls after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg, and we are talking to Marathon County Administrator Brad Karger about the effect of the proposed biennium budget on county government and the services it provides. I want to play a short news story that we did on Monday regarding the hearing that took place in Wausau on the proposed biennium budget, in which County Board Chairman Keith Langenhan testified.
One of the parts of the budget that came in for criticism is a proposal to take the administration of Medicaid, food share, and other services for low-income people away from county governments, centralize it at the state level, and then give it to a private vendor. Marathon County Chairman Keith Langenhan questioned whether the privatization plan could do as good a job dealing with the county's poor as the people on his staff.
We deliver very quality products to our people that needed the services, and we have 26 people in the department that delivered this service. We naturally will have to lay those off.
Langenhan said layoffs could cost Marathon County $400,000 in unemployment payments. Lori Garber works for the county's Department of Social Services. She told the panel that many of the poor people she deals with need personal interaction.
We talk to these people. We know where they're coming from. We know what they need.
Democratic State Senator Julie Lassa asked Garber of reported delays in claim processing elsewhere by Hewlett-Packard, who she said was the likely vendor that would be hired to administer the Medicaid and food share programs. Garber said such delays would be devastating to her clients.
If we had to wait so long to get their applications processed, they may not be able to go to the doctor. They may not be able to get their prescriptions. Also with the food share, they may not have food on their table for themselves or for their children.
Marathon County administers low-income programs for 40,000 of its residents. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Brad Karger, is that an accurate figure? 40,000 residents in Marathon County, which isn't that big, are eligible for low-income programs of one sort or another?
No, that's exactly right. 40,000, so of a population of 130,000.
And
prosperous county.
And Keith Langenhan said you might have to lay off 26 social service workers. How many layoffs in all do you think?
40.
40?
40 total, if you know, just with not in the income maintenance unit, but 26 there, but 40 total based on our current budget projections.
And that hits you with an unemployment cost that you haven't budgeted for.
Yeah, about $9,500 apiece.
So that's about $400,000 that you haven't planned for that has to be made up somehow.
That's about right, yeah.
Talk about this idea of centralizing the administration of these programs for the poor, taking it away from the county where you have actual 26 workers who go out and talk to these people,
right,
and let them know exactly what their options are, what they can do, help them fill out the forms and so forth. And now it'll be administered at the state level, presumably by Hewlett-Packard.
Right.
And you'll take out all of that personal interaction.
Right. What will happen, and it's already happened to some extent to unemployment compensation, where you apply for unemployment and you report in using the phone or a computer. Now, that I think actually is a pretty good success story. But when you talk about eligibility for food stamps or the Medicaid programs or child care or the various aid programs that we have, they are so much more complicated than unemployment will ever be. That's just about income. These are very complicated programs. And what will happen is, first of all, a lot of our clients are not computer savvy. Second of all, they're not prepared. And one of the problems that they have with the call center that Hewlett-Packard offers now is they have a wait time, and it's typically 30 minutes. Well, you have to have I think it's an 800 number, but you have to have cell time minutes and stuff like that. So they really have some quality issues. But
where do they administer programs like this right now?
They do it for the state for childless adults for Medicaid.
Okay.
So it's the simplest program that is. They have.
So they're already doing it in Wisconsin.
They are. And you know what? I know some of our workers, they have the documentation to show that their accuracy rate is about half as good as all the other counties, that their customer service is not as good, and that they cost more. But remember, they're new. They're just getting into the market. They're using an automated system. They got all new staff. I can actually see some potential here using part of the ideas put forward by Scott Walker. I expect that the Counties Association, they're currently drafting a proposal to regionalize parts of this, to have some people county-based, because there are some people who qualify for these aid programs who can be served by a computer or a telephone, and that may well, I think, will be long-term, once they the workers understand it, be more efficient.
How important is it for this personal contact?
Well, it is, especially on the initial part, not just the reporting. See, what happens is you have to get authorized, but then you have to, things change all the time. And some people can keep those reports up on an automated basis. But here's what happens more often than not. You come in asking for Medicaid, and the worker, 5 minutes in your interview, knows you're never going to get that. But they know that you do qualify for food stamps. You haven't asked about food stamps. If you're on a computer, the computer's not going to tell you anything about food stamps. So what they do is they steer you to the benefit programs that you're likely to qualify for, plus they fill out the application of the one you request.
Well, I imagine a lot of these people don't have computers.
Well, some don't, and then they can use the library's computers, but we have limits as to how many people can use those for how long, and if you get frustrated on it, you may overuse the time.
We're talking to Brad Carter, the Marathon County Administrator, about proposed revenue cuts, budget cuts, changes to the administration of programs like Medicaid and food share and senior care in Governor Walker's proposed biennium budget. We want to hear your phone calls and your response and your questions at 1-800-780-9742. We also want to encourage the caller who's on right now, Susan from Presque Isle. We promise we will get to you right after the news break. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, 1-800-780-9742. We will be back with your phone calls right after this news. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, discussing the likely local and regional effects of Governor Walker's proposed biennium budget on our county governments and the services that they provide. Our guest, Marathon County Administrator Brad Carter. I'm Glenn Mobrig. If you've got questions, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Susan in Presque Isle, who's been waiting patiently. Susan, you're on Route 51.
Hi, good evening.
Thanks for joining us.
Hello to your guest. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just two points that I wanted to bring up, and I'm not sure if your guest is familiar or not, but from what I've read, Wisconsin is one of the few states remaining that has not centralized these services. So although there are usually tremendous growing pains with this type of process, we are still one of the few remaining that haven't made this move. So I wasn't sure if he's aware of that and, you know, how many states remain and if this isn't just a natural progression of the way things are going.
I do know.
The second point, mm-hmm. The second question is, it also seems not only Marathon County, but it seems, I don't know if the word is epidemic, but from my firsthand experience, it seems as though more and more, a higher percentage of employers are just opting out of health care altogether. So it seems that the present system that we have, the services that we provide here in Wisconsin, the system is not sustainable. It's so complex, and so many people end up qualifying, and it doesn't necessarily encourage folks to get back to work. There are many people that are on the system for a long time. If we were to cut those benefits or tighten up the eligibility requirements, could the cost savings, when we talk about a cost shift, could the funds that are saved on that end go to some sort of subsidy or credit to employers to get them back on track with offering health care?
Susan, some very good questions. Brad Carter?
Okay, let me start with the second question. The first is that because Badger Care Plus existed, I know from talking to our workers that a number of employers that are probably marginally profitable actually move their employees, encourage their employees to apply for the public benefit. Okay, so when they had nothing before, they did offer a benefit. Probably wasn't nearly the benefit that some larger employers offered. But when Badger Care Plus became available, they used the public system and the lower wages that were paid to their workers and encourage them to apply for the public benefit. A lot of them now become not eligible because of an increase in the income and asset standard, what will happen is that these employers will not reinstate their health care benefit, not in this recession. I just don't see that happening. What I think will happen is the people will just be uninsured, and they'll still continue to have health care issues. They'll still continue to get health care, and it'll be funded the way it was before, and it really was cost shifted to anybody that the health care providers could.
And the first part of the question of this centralization is something that isn't just happening in Wisconsin, it's happening all over the country.
Well, that's not quite true. The centralization, that the model for Wisconsin is Indiana, okay, and that's where this model comes from. Now, what you have to understand, too, is that Wisconsin uses the counties in a way, and some states do, but very few, to deliver state services. In most states, the state delivers their own services directly. So you could say that, well, all these states are centralized now, but they always were. Okay, so what I would advocate for and what the county association is going to put forward is a mixture, not what we have now and not exactly what they propose in this budget, which is a computer or phone-based system, not personal care. I would opt for a regional system where it's a coalition of counties, maybe at the most 14 units. So that will result in some savings, but maintaining personal meetings for the initial meetings for people who need that and need that kind of personal attention. And then they can use the computers and the phones to keep up annual reports to determine, document that they're still eligible. I think we can merge a system that's both humane and economic, rather than just going with the one system. It would have to be a partnership of the state, of their private vendor, and the counties, and I think that would be a preferred system.
Susan, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks so much for the phone call. And let's keep going down this list, Brad Karger. Total enrollment in family care is frozen. What does that mean for Marathon County?
First of all, it's not Marathon County issue. It's a Central Wisconsin issue. Family care is one of the achievements of our region. Prior to 5 years ago, if you were in Marathon County, you're elderly or disabled, you're both functionally, meaning you're disabled sufficiently to qualify for care in a nursing home, meaning you're very disabled, and you meet the Medicaid income standards, what would happen is you qualified for what we call the COP waiver program, the Community Options Program. And that program had between a 2 and a 5 year waiting list. Now, even though your needs are so great, you could be served in a nursing home where there was an entitlement and the public sector would pay, you sat on that list and nothing happened until somebody went off the list, kind of like buying Packer tickets, but not quite as long a list. And people were staying in desperate situations that was not healthy or safe for them because they did not want to be institutionalized. And they came up with their own strategies, and they survived somehow, some. But it was not a preferred system. So really starting to the credit of Portage County, they started a new program which included social workers working with families to determine what their real needs were, negotiating with providers to get discounts, and adopting a capitated rate from the state.
What does that mean?
It means that it's an HMO plan rather than a regular kind of health care plan. What they would get is, let's just say every participant got $10,000 a month, and they had to meet their needs within that budget, or it was their deficit. And what would happen is you'd get somebody who had $15,000 a month needs of care, and you needed to get somebody that had $5,000 a month to make the money work. Okay, so that's how it worked, and you were the HMO provider. Now, that was the other benefit to this was it was an entitlement program, so there were no waiting lists. So the minute that you got, at least in theory, you became eligible, you got the benefit, and that was the drawing card.
So now that we've got waiting lists, what does that mean?
Well, we don't. What it means is that it means that people again will not be served until somebody else comes off the program. So we'll have people out there who need health supports so desperate that they qualify for a nursing home, living home unattended.
At Monday's hearing, we heard from Greg Seubert, who's the director of transportation of the bus system in the greater Wausau area. This is one of the few services in Marathon County that is actually regionalized, where you have cooperation between the different communities. And he's very concerned about cutbacks in the proposed budget.
For Wausau, state funding has fallen from 42% of our annual operating expenses to just 26%. The budget proposed by the governor would cut state funding an additional 10%, while at the same time slashing shared revenue payments for municipalities and tightening levy limits. There is no local funding alternative for Metroride, so our partner communities will have few options but to cut transit services and increase passenger fares. In fact, the Village of Weston has already notified us of their intent to eliminate Metroride services as a result of the governor's budget. Previous service cuts have disproportionately impacted the working poor and middle-class families who rely on our services to access employment and educational opportunities. Additional fare increases may make public transit unaffordable to those who need it most. I fear that transit systems may not survive this next round of cuts, and some of the most vulnerable of our citizens will be stranded with no transportation alternatives. The impact on local jobs and the local economy will be considerable. Sadly, Wisconsin may not be open for business for those who rely on public transit.
It's Wausau Area Transit Director Greg Seubert worrying that the proposed budget cuts may devastate bus service, which will keep poor people, the elderly, from getting to where they have to go, and may even keep some people from getting to their jobs. Brad Carr.
Right. No, I think that's all true. It really points out how connected all these things are. You know, the programs that we administer to the poor, to the people who are disadvantaged, we expect that people can get to our offices and are mobile around the community. You know, we do worker training, but if you can't get to the tech college, that's not that helpful. This whole public transportation, that's just the urbanized piece of it. We also administer a rural piece of this, helping the elderly and disabled get to their doctor appointments and other kinds of things, and the funding for that is being reduced also. So mobility is a real issue. The people in Wausau who ride the bus that I observe over by the courthouse, they're not people with other options. I mean, one of the big criticisms is the buses aren't full. Well, most of us, it really won't make that much difference to our day-to-day existence if the bus system is there or not. But the people who ride it really need it, and their whole life experience would change dramatically if that were eliminated or reduced to the point to where it's not helpful to them.
I did a story on this a little bit earlier when they were actually worried about shutting down the system because of the collective bargaining requirements, which we were able to come up with a solution for, so that at least that isn't imminent.
Right.
But I talked to a lady who was developmentally disabled. She couldn't drive. She didn't have enough money to pay for a taxi, mm-hmm. but she took that bus to a factory where she was employed, and she was so proud to be on that bus every day, mm-hmm. taking that trip to her place of employment and to be somebody who was able to benefit society and take care of herself and earn a wage for herself. And the thought that in order to balance this budget, we're going to take transportation away from people like that is, you know, some people would call it unconscionable.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing I do have to say in defense of Governor Walker is these deficits are real.
Right.
And you know what? You know, people say, well, cut waste, fraud, and abuse. There really isn't that much of that. And we've got to continue to look for efficiencies. But in the end, when you have these massive cuts and you've constrained yourself by saying we're not going to raise any taxes or fees and we're going to get out of this in the 2-year biennium, now you're going to see the real impacts of this. These decisions, which I think were well known to the public when they had the gubernatorial election, on real people. And I think they're going to be people that people know.
How do you feel as a local administrator about being constrained from raising local taxes and fees? Because it seems that local control is something that we've always held up as an ideal before. The state shouldn't be telling local governments that they can't raise revenue in order to meet the services that local people feel that they should have met.
Right. Well, of course, I believe in the authority of local officials to make decisions local elected officials to make on behalf of our community. So it strikes me as disrespectful to the local officials and the people who elected them to constrain them in terms of raising taxes and to constrain them in a maintenance of effort capacity. And one of the issues that I have with the current budget, but first of all, let me make another point, and that is local mandates, constraints on local officials is not a Republican exclusive territory. That is a bipartisan problem. Everybody gets elected saying we're going to let the local officials decide stuff, and I've been, you know, in administration here for 23 years, and
you get it from everybody.
It comes from everybody, you know, telling somebody else what to do. Somehow, I guess they're encouraged by the special interest groups to do so, but some of them can come up to be really odd. And one of the things they eliminated that's been a burr under myself for a long time was the maintenance of effort for libraries. Personally, I like libraries, but I also think that the local officials should be deciding what our priorities are. Last year in the budget, I had to budget a three-year rolling average for the library. I could not budget less. Otherwise, we would be an isolated island in the library world, and that's not acceptable. This year, there's a new one on public safety. That maintenance of effort says I have to fund at least a three-year rolling average of all the dollars that go to public safety. A, there's not a good definition of public safety. But let me tell you on a practical term how this turns into a problem. 2 years ago, we had 20 to 30 people in the Shawano County Jail. Marathon County resident, we were just over full. Last year, we had a similar number. Now we have none. Okay? So going forward in the next year's budget, it's possible that we could have to put money in the budget for people to go to out-of-county jails when we don't have anybody who needs to go there and close a library branch because the decision was made by a superior level of government which did not understand the local conditions and does not respond to the local control. So you get these kind of oddball decisions.
So you're saying you can deal maybe with the budget cuts, but you'd like to have more authority over how that money is spent.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think that there are too many rules and too many constraints on local officials.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to Brad Carter, Marathon County Administrator, about how the proposed biennium budget and its revenue cuts will affect you if you depend on county services. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy Stevens Point, partnering with Focus on Energy to provide clean, renewable energy for Wisconsin residents, specializing in Velux residential solar hot water systems. Learn more at northwindre.com.
Recycling, Brad Carter. We're looking at an elimination of that program, and apparently there's been a change of heart.
Yeah, I think that that's going to get repaired. But let me just describe the initial proposal. The initial proposal was every time that the garbage truck tips, it's called a tipping fee, at our landfill, $6 goes to fund municipal collection of recyclables and the marketing of them. Well, the proposal of the governor was that we'd still charge that fee, but it would go to Madison and wouldn't stay local. So it would go there to support economic development efforts, which we support, but not necessarily that the funding source. The municipalities would have no requirement to collect it, but it's still illegal for you to put it in your trash, and it's illegal for us to accept it at the landfill. So there was something missing with this proposal. What are you supposed to do with your recyclables? I wasn't planning on putting an addition on my garage to keep a bunch of empty milk bottles. So I think that this is about to be reinstated, and I think it's about to be repaired in the budget. But I don't know what the municipalities are going to respond.
I think there was bipartisan criticism of it, and what I've been reading is that indeed this is something that's been going to be taken out. Let's go to, is it Linda in Montello?
Correct. I just wanted to thank you very much for having this program. I'm in Marquette County, and we're having very similar issues to what you're discussing today. I wanted to let you know that I moved here from another state about 5 years ago, and I was totally impressed by how Wisconsin treats its people. I got involved in volunteer programs in the state and in the county here, and I was just appalled when I heard what the governor wants to do with the county employees and the way that they interact and treat the people who need our help in Wisconsin. So I just really appreciate you having this program and letting folks know what's really going on.
Linda, thanks so much for the phone call. Brad Carger, I don't know if you've got anything to add to that.
No, thank you.
You're welcome.
In our final few minutes, I want to play some comments made by Weston Village Administrator Dean Zuliger, and he testified at both the hearing before the Joint Finance Committee in Stevens Point and the hearing that took place Monday in Wausau on a proposal that he's come up with, which would force local governments to cooperate and force them to reduce their own budgets and lose state aid in the process if they have to.
We believe that this budget only serves as a band-aid approach to municipal government. If the legislature does not deal with a complete overhaul in a manner that removes duplication of effort, layers of regulatory burden for both the taxpayer and our valued business community, and streamlines delivery of essential services. So I'm here to talk about doing some serious surgery rather than a band-aid approach to this budget that reconstructs government at every level and reduces the tax burden on our citizenry. In business, it's called lean. And in the government form, it comes in two parts. First, I'm asking this policy committee to mandate that by 2014, all levels of government in Wisconsin adopt lean principles of management that reduce 5% of their baseline operating budgets based on their 2012 budgets. And I'm asking that you adopt statutory language that ties implementation of lean principles to the amount of shared revenue a community may receive. I'd also ask that this committee include an amendment to this budget that creates a lean government commission similar to what our neighbors in Iowa have successfully implemented to promote and oversee government efficiency efforts. Second, I'm asking this policy committee to mandate that all local levels of government be engaged in a consolidated or shared service arrangement with an adjoining government by 2014 and put the same shared revenue cuts in place if they don't do that. The problem that we have here is parochialism, turf battles, those kinds of things.
Brad Carger is a Marathon County Administrator. You deal with county board members from a variety of communities. Do you see something like this as being a possible solution which would force them to cooperate instead of the parochialism that Mr. Zuliger was talking about?
Well, I guess I agree that lean methodology should be applied to governmental entities, and I'm not sure about the characterization of forcing. I mean, it strikes me that if they could put up some dollars and have some people in the university system help us do that, we want to do that. And we've already adopted lean methodology in our corporation council with good effect, and we're using it in our finance department. And if we had the capacity to have somebody help us, at an affordable rate, we would adopt it in all of our departments. So I would question the approach. I think you could incentivize it and offer opportunities and maybe some consequences if productivity isn't improved. But I would start by taking a more positive approach to that.
Brad, we've touched on a lot of different areas, and here we've got like a minute to talk about one final area, senior care.
Okay.
There's going to be changes in the administration. How is that going to affect the elderly people who depend on it?
Well, here's what I'm afraid is going to happen is right now, senior care is a very simple program and provides a good benefit to people. The seniors understand how to do it. They're going to be getting a letter at the end of the year under the governor's proposal, which requires them to sign up for Medicare Part D, the drug part. And if they don't do that, they'll have no benefit. And I'm afraid that a lot of our customers, we have 2,700 of them in Marathon County, will not, A, understand the significance of that letter, and, B, the complexity of signing up for Part D will end up where they don't get it done. So I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to draw down some more federal money to support a Medicaid program with a massive deficit. But it strikes me that this is going to be a very damaging approach, and they need to allocate some resources so that they reach out to people and make sure that they understand what they need to do and help them do that rather than just say you're going to be off if you don't do this by such and such a date.
You're worried that we might have maybe hundreds of seniors who suddenly are off of senior care.
Without really realizing it. And they have no benefit then.
Brad Carger, thanks so much for joining us. Anything you'd like to add?
No, I think I just appreciate people listening.
And anybody they should call if they have questions in Marathon County or in any other county about any of these programs and their effects.
Well, they, you know, I think they should contact their elected officials. I think they should express their viewpoints, talk about the things that they see as positive. I think they should admit to people that even if they see something that's really outrageous, that they think is outrageous, that this is a difficult time, that the deficits are real. They're bipartisan deficits. They were created by many people over a long period of time, and they have to be resolved. Now, the question is, what is that strategy?
We want to thank today's guest, Marathon County Administrator Brad Karger. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Jake Clotty. And thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Reminder, you can follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.